Thank you. Thank you for having me. And you can never be too Jewish.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, our guest on Two Jewish is Jeff Harner, Jewish cabaret singer on his new old album, Jeff Harner Sings Sammy Kahn, the second time around. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Last week, Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu addressed a joint session of Congress. This for the fourth time, setting a new record, eclipsing of all people, Winston Churchill. Bibi Netanyahu received a number of standing ovations, including rousing ones when he entered, and then again when he was announced, and at various other times, and finally when he finished. The solidarity with Israel was strong in the U.S. Congress last week, as it has been ever since October 7th. Thank God. In his speech, as usual, Benjamin Netanyahu was highly articulate, at times eloquent even. He has a great command of language in both Hebrew and English, which I have witnessed in person a couple of times, met him and so on, and he is certainly a brilliant man. Now, as to the content of what he said, well, let's begin our show with some thoughts on his current standing in his own country, that is, Israel, not the U.S. Congress. First, Bibi has never taken responsibility for the cataclysmic failures of October 7th, the fact that his own government allowed the worst attack on Jews to take place since the Holocaust. Let's be clear. The October 7th litany of Palestinian atrocities committed against innocent civilians was preventable if Netanyahu's government had not made an entire roster of terrible errors of policy and judgment all along the way. Since October 7th, the heads of Israeli military intelligence and other agencies have accepted responsibility and resigned. The IDF has made it clear it made terrible mistakes. Other Israeli security and defense agencies, now embroiled in a terrible and preventable war against vicious and evil foes, have accepted responsibility and tried to atone, typically with resignations and new approaches. You know, President Harry Truman had a famous plaque on his desk when he was the U.S. president. It read, of course, "The buck stops here." But that's not Bibi's style. At no point has Netanyahu admitted his own culpability in this disaster. And make no mistake, the murder of thousands of Israelis, Americans, and those of some 40 other nations on October 7th by 3,000 Palestinian Arab terrorists from Gaza was completely avoidable. It should never have happened. And Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, her official leader for like 12 of the past 13 years, Netanyahu has blood on his hands, and I'm not referring to the blood of Hamas's Palestinian terrorists or even the civilians killed in the brutal fighting in Gaza. I mean Netanyahu has Jewish blood on his hands. Israelis know this. They know Netanyahu created and pushed a policy of support for Hamas, both financially and politically, so that Hamas would be the counterweight to the Palestinian Authority of Fatah and help preclude a Palestinian state actually coming into existence. Without literal suitcases full of cash delivered by Israel at Netanyahu's orders, Hamas would never have become a player in Gaza or the West Bank. Bibi did not create Hamas, but he gave it life for years. And then when it got too big for its britches and started to cause major problems for Israel, he would send in the IDF in various operations, his policy of mowing the grass. But Hamas learned if they simply played this game long enough, they could fool Bibi and Israel's intelligence leadership into believing they had given up hope of ever destroying Israel. Meanwhile, under Bibi's government, made up now of a super right-wing coalition of religious extremists and Arab haters, the focus went from containing Hamas in Gaza to expanding Jewish settlements in the West Bank. That required a reallocation of Israel's military power away from the borders of simmering Gaza and into protecting extremist Jewish settlers in areas populated by overwhelming proportions of Palestinian Arabs. Gaza dropped way down the priority list for Bibi's government. They more or less said, "We put up a fancy high-tech fence. That will stop them." The thinking was that the Gaza-Palestinian leadership under Hamas was now interested solely in improving matters for their own people, and perhaps accepting bribes, and not in attacking Israel. That mentality went so far as to obscure obvious large-scale terrorist training held in full view of Israeli military units. Many warning signs were ignored. Those Hamas people were no real threat, Bibi's government thought. Bibi thought. And so, when October 7th, Simchat Torah morning dawned, the low-tech bulldozers, trucks, cars, and motorbikes, and Palestinian terrorists on foot, too, poured 3,000 highly armed murderers, rapists, torturers, and kidnappers into unprepared civilian communities, into a large music and peace festival. Palestinian terrorists all over southern Israel. Army bases staffed by raw recruits instead of veteran troops were overrun. The army took hours to respond effectively. It was horrible, in a way no Israeli even imagined before that day. In his speech to Congress last week, Bibi described accurately the barbarism of these Palestinian Arab terrorists. They are horrible. To call them evil itself is no exaggeration. But what Bibi has consistently failed to understand, or more likely just refused to admit, is that he shares responsibility for these atrocities. The many hostages still stuck in Gaza, some alive, many dead by now, are there largely because of errors of judgment that Bibi Netanyahu made. Where is the courage to take responsibility for the horrors he allowed to happen on his watch? Yes, I know. Israel is at war and fighting, in words Bibi takes from his own father's writings, for the sake of civilization against barbarism. Yes, I know. Iran is behind much of this, or at the very least is taking every opportunity to take advantage of things and fund the evil and the weak-headed who hate Jews in Israel and the West more generally. Still, how can you claim to be a leader and not accept responsibility for what you have allowed to occur? This Gaza war, the 300-plus soldiers killed fighting in Gaza, the civilians killed in the Golan and now in Tel Aviv itself, the thousands of wounded, the extreme damage to Israel's collective mental health, the awful effect on its children, the damage to Israel's economy. Where is the accountability, Mr. Prime Minister, for all this carnage? When you celebrate that 7 hostages have been liberated by the IDF in your speech to Congress, 7. Out of 250 originally taken, just what do you think you are showing? Certainly, this death and terrible trauma is Hamas's fault, and the Palestinian terrorists and their leaders more generally, and their funders in Iran and elsewhere. But it is also Bibi's fault. The buck, or the shekel, must stop at the top, and Netanyahu never takes responsibility. Never. That's why, in spite of the standing ovations from members of Congress, not counting those who didn't show up to hear Netanyahu, those ovations don't matter quite as much as Netanyahu's 31% approval rating in Israel among the people who know him best. That means that more than 2 out of 3 Israelis want him gone. This guy they have voted in time and time again. As to the rest of Netanyahu's speech, well, the usual eloquent evocation of Israel standing as a bulwark of freedom against tyranny and terrorism, civilization against destruction. The usual bold pronouncement, Israel will win. Yeah, it will, because it has no choice, but what will actually constitute winning? The display of heroes who fought the Palestinian terrorists and of the hostages who have been able to come home to their families. Look, we should be profoundly grateful for the determined U.S. support for Israel, so essential at this incredibly challenging time, a time of great heroism among Israelis for sure. But don't be fooled. Bibi is no hero. He is a leader who has refused and refuses to accept responsibility for his own horrible failure. Do I think Netanyahu is prolonging the hostage crisis in order to prolong the war and stay in power as prime minister? Well, most Israelis now do. Do I think that Netanyahu is fanning flames in the north to stay in power? Many Israelis now do. It's just time for Bibi to pass from the scene. Maybe this appearance at Congress was his last valedictory. Fine. But you know, I doubt it. That would require a level of character that he simply does not possess. Of course Israel will survive, and this war will end. And after some time, Israel will recover. It is an incredibly strong and amazingly resilient country. But Netanyahu will have to leave before that process can really begin. In much happier news this morning, and to play us in, here's a cut from our guest, Jeff Harnar. It's his duet of Sammy Kahn's classic, Come Fly With Me, from his new album, sung with Nicole Zoraitis.
You can fly, you can fly.
You can fly, you can fly.
You can fly, you can fly.
You can fly. Come fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue.
Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide, starry-eyed.
Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near. You may hear angels cheer, 'cause we're together. Weather-wise, it's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay.
It's perfect for a flagging honeymoon, they say.
Come fly with me, let's fly.
Let's fly away.
You can fly, you can fly, you can fly.
When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Jeff Harnar, explains just what proportion of the composers of the Great American Songbook are Jewish. It's not all of them, it just seems like it, and why Sammy Kahn was so special. Find out when we come back in a moment, right here on To Jewish.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
To welcome in our guest, Jeff Harner, here's a little bit of his extraordinarily unusual recording of the classic Yiddish hit by Mir Bistu Shein. He'll explain a little later how this combination of Yiddish, Swahili, and English came about. Really cool.
Means that you're grand.
Of all the girls I've known, and I've known some, until I first met you, I was lonesome. But when you came inside, dear, my heart grew light, and this old world seemed new to me. You're really swell, I have to admit you deserve expressions that really fit you. And so I've racked my brain trying to explain all the things that you do to me. By me, this to shame, please let.
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish, our guests this morning. Jeff Harner is an award-winning cabaret, concert, and recording artist. He has appeared at Carnegie Hall, been on PBS, has a whole host of performances of all kinds of wonderful songs, in particular what we often call the Great American Songbook. His new album is called Sammy Kahn, The Second Time Around. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. I'm so delighted to be here.
So I have to say, it sometimes seems when we look at so many of the classic American songs that all of the great songwriters were Jewish. Now, that's not true, but...
It feels true.
It does feel kind of true anyway. I mean, okay, Cole Porter, we'll give you a few, but still. How did you decide on using Sammy Kahn for this album?
Well, as a cabaret performer, it started 25 years ago when I was putting together the show. The show is actually preceded the album. And when I'm performing a show, I'm always, the lyrics are the most important to me. They're my script, they're my text. And Sammy Kahn just was one of the great, not only beautifully deep love songs, but also wonderful humor. And then, of course, all those Rat Pack, swaggery, Frank Sinatra lyrics,
Sing them while you hold a glass of bourbon.
That's exactly right. Trench coat over the shoulder, cigarette in one hand, fedora, matching tie, pocket square hat band, Rat Pack.
Look, it's a lovely, lovely album. As somebody who sings music that was written, much of it 60, 70, 80 years ago, how do you reinterpret it in ways that reach a younger audience?
Well, I work with a wonderful music director, Alex Rybeck, and he and I just past the 41-year mark of our musical partnership.
Oh, my goodness.
And on this project, we worked with a director named Gary Kleinborg. And together, we look at the songs where the lyrics feel personal to me and true to me, and we figure out musically how they're going to come out of me. it's very hard to get some of those definitive recordings out of my head. Frank Sinatra, Gene Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., there are just so many definitive recordings of Sammy Kahn's songs. But we approach them trying to make them personal and true to me as who I am today.
We will come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish and talk a little bit about who Sammy Kahn was. And, well, we'll hear a lot more of Jeff Harner in just a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer. Established nearly 6 years ago by wonderful congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the Catalina foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school is available. Sign up now. School-aged children or grandchildren, join us in Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. A new Torah Tots, Torah Tykes gig is coming up in just a couple weeks. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., Shabbat celebration services with lots of music, followed by an Oneg Shabbat immediately thereafter. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, also BeitSimcha Tucson, by the way, has all of our services as well. Our Adult Education Academy classes are available in person and on Zoom. Go to the website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, to sign up, including our brand new class, The History of Zionism, which starts in just a couple weeks. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and the fastest-growing Jewish congregation and most dynamic synagogue in all of southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at toojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's toojewishradio18@gmail.com. Or go to our website, toojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, toojewishradio.com, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts, Top 10 in North America or in Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads from iTunes on Podbean and Spotify. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments really help. There are so many excellent Sammy Kahn songs, we simply must play another one. This is Jeff Harner's recording, our guest this morning. The Second Time Around, it's his title track and includes, to my knowledge, the first use of the phrase, youth is wasted on the young. Boy, is that ever true. It's a great song.
Love is lovelier the second time around. Just as wonderful with both feet on the ground. It's that second time you hear your love song sung. Makes you think, perhaps, that love, like youth, is wasted on the young. Love's more comfortable the second time you fall like a...
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
I'm curious as to what the largest Jewish community in Europe is. I just saw a quote from the head of the Jewish communities of France saying there's no future for Jews in France. And I always thought France was like the largest Jewish community in Europe. I don't know, close to 500,000 people, something like that. But apparently that may not be the largest Jewish community in Europe.
Right. There is, as our Ashkenazic forefathers would say, a machloikis.
A machloikis.
On this. Because in the West, there is a tradition of being openly affiliated with one faith or another and paying taxes so that the state funded certain religious activities based on the taxes that affiliates of that religion would pay. And that was true in France and many other places for a long time. In the East, on the other hand, particularly in the former Soviet Union, where being Jewish was so necessarily surreptitious and dangerous, whatever, a lot of people hid their identities or were unaware of them or didn't express their identities in any way or chose not to affiliate and engage in any communal activity. After the fall of the Soviet Union, when countries became liberated to different extents, economically, politically, socially, et cetera, all kinds of things that were once forbidden began to flourish. Now, in some cases, that was like LGBTQ life, which was, you know, like a capital crime under the Soviets. And there are some countries in the former Soviet Union where they're out and proud and have pride parades and stuff safely. But this is particularly true with respect to Jews, and particularly true with respect to Jews in Ukraine. Now, why do I say that? There are those who would argue that the actual Jewish population of Ukraine today is somewhere between 500,000 and 1,000,000. And that unlike the given Jewish population of Kiev, which is 30,000, there's actually 300,000 Jews living in Kiev. And their evidence for this is the number of people who participate in programs of increasingly active Jewish community centers, programs run by the JDC, care packages for elders, Jewish summer camps, youth groups, all kinds of things. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but in what used to be called Dnipropetrovsk, which is a mouthful.
That's easy for you to say.
It's now called Dnipro, which is the Ukrainian name. Dnipropetrovsk was a Russian name. So the Ukrainians switched up a lot of the names, including Kiev, which is now Kyiv, hard to say also. But in that city, the Jewish Community Center is like 40 stories tall, and it has a membership base of at least 40,000 people. Wow. So if there's 40,000 people in Dnipro, which is not a historic Jewish center, think how many more there must be in Kharkiv, in Kiev, in Odessa, in Lviv, places that are historic Jewish centers.
Important Jewish centers with long histories and elaborate cultures.
So now a lot of these cities have thriving Jewish restaurants, kosher restaurants.
Which is more than you can say for Tucson, Arizona, right, by the way.
They all have Chabad presences. They often have presence from the Reform movement. And even the conservative movement, late to join the party as usual, is present in some of the larger communities in Ukraine. So no one knows for a fact, but there's certainly an argument that can be made that the Ukrainian Jewish community, including lots of people who aren't officially registered as Jews, is much larger than the Jewish community of France, where until quite recently there was no great risk attached to identifying yourself as a Jew or to attending Jewish community events or whatever. It was a pretty organized and structured community, and it was pretty much aware of every single Jew. In Ukraine, there continue to be surprises where somebody comes out of the closet and says, yeah, my great-grandfather was Jewish, or whatever. So then, of course, there's a question of by whose definition is somebody Jewish or not Jewish? If you have to have a Jewish mother and that has to be provable, then the numbers are much smaller. But if identifying as a Jew and having a Jewish grandparent is enough, and it was certainly enough for Hitler, then the numbers in Ukraine are staggeringly large.
Yeah, and obviously it was enough in the original law of return to Israel. Tom, thanks. It's fascinating. You know, I just hadn't seen that and hadn't kind of realized that, which also makes this Russian war on Ukraine even more dangerous for Jews than it seemed at first. It's a much larger Jewish population than we thought.
Right.
Tom, thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to that.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. It's now 3 years ago last week that the great comedian Jackie Mason, Zichrono Livracha, passed away. In his memory, we dedicate a couple of his jokes, although, of course, we won't be able to tell them as well as he did. My grandfather always said I shouldn't watch my money. I should watch my health. So while I was watching my health, someone stole my money. It was my grandfather. And at my age, it's no longer a question of staying healthy. It's finding a sickness that you like. Those were the old Jewish jokes of the week in memory of Jackie Mason, Alav HaShalom, a special feature of Too Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well. Or at least find a sickness you like. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the double portions of Matot and Maaseh, last sections of the book of Numbers, Bamidbar. Both portions teach an important message about the centrality of Jewish family values, but they do so in quite different ways. The setting for these final parshiot in Numbers is the border of the Promised Land as the Israelites approach Canaan for a second time after their 40-year sojourn in the wilderness of Sinai. As the tribes gather to enter the land, two of them, Reuben and Gad, make a strange request of Moses. You know, we like the land we're traveling through now here on the east bank of the Jordan, in what is today the country of Jordan, 1,000 years before Arab peoples even moved into the Middle East. The leaders of Reuben and Gad, these two tribes, say, let us stay here and build sheepfolds for our flocks and towns for our children. And Moses agrees, but in curious language. He changes things. First, he tells them, build towns for your children, and only then build sheepfolds for your flocks. The message is clear. Families come first. Our professions and income are second. It is a human message and one that we need to relearn in every generation. Behold, Dor Vador, put family first. And then in the very last section of Numbers, Maaseh, an important and unusual institution is created, the City of Refuge. In the days before police forces or criminal courts were common, justice in cases of manslaughter or murder was accomplished by the family of the victim. Vigilante action was the normal means to address the moral and social disruption created by a killing. If you killed somebody, intentionally or accidentally, or even if the family of a person who was killed just thought you'd committed the killing, you were likely going to be killed by their kinsmen. Which means that if you are involved in such a terrible situation, you have very little chance to stay alive, even if the killing was accidental and you were completely innocent of any intent. The wheels of justice might turn for you eventually, but if you're already dead in a revenge killing, that won't help much. This kind of reprisal killing also could and did lead to cycles of revenge, the sort of blood feuds Mark Twain described about the Hatfields and the McCoys several millennia later, the kind of clan murder revenge cycles that take place even today in the Palestinian Arab towns of the West Bank. To preclude this social disaster, the Torah portions must say provides for six cities of refuge in and around the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael. No one who enters these cities may be executed without a fair trial. Being present in the city of refuge is a kind of protection, a guarantee of due process. This has become central in modern law, but was mostly absent throughout human history. And yet the Torah established that principle some 3,000 years ago or so. Whether it did so to protect innocents accused of murder or simply to keep families from falling into cycles of violence, we don't know. But we do know the Torah teaches us in this different way that the most basic unit of society must be nurtured, maintained, and protected, its positive values strengthened, even in the most trying of situations. The family. A great message still. When we come back in a moment, our guest, Jeff Harner, tells us why he chose to re-release and reimagine Sammy Kahn's great songs now. Find out. Come back in a moment here on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Less than a month after his closed-door trial began, Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich was convicted of espionage by a Russian court and sentenced to 16 years in a maximum security prison. Gershkovich, who is 32 years old, is the American-born son of Jewish refugees from the former Soviet Union. His case has drawn support from the Jewish community and supporters of democracy and free press who are pushing for his release. Jewish Federations of North America called the verdict a sham. Gershkovich, his employer, and the U.S. all deny he is a spy. U.S. authorities have been trying to secure his release through a prisoner swap. Gershkovich is the first American reporter since the Cold War to be arrested on espionage charges in Russia. Last week, Putin's Russian courts sentenced the Russian-American writer Masha Gessen, also Jewish, of course, to 8 years in prison in absentia, making Gessen at least the fifth prominent Jewish writer targeted by Russia for dissenting comments since the outbreak of the current Russia-Ukraine war. This disgraceful sham conviction comes after Evan has spent 478 days in prison, wrongfully detained, away from family and friends, prevented from reporting, all for doing his job as a journalist, said Alma Latour, chief executive of Dow Jones and publisher of the Wall Street Journal, along with Wall Street Journal editor-in-chief Emma Tucker. He was targeted by the Russian government because he's a journalist and American, said President Joe Biden. We are pushing hard for Evan's release and will continue to do so. Australia's Jessica Fox is already widely regarded as the greatest individual slalom canoe paddler of all time. She has four Olympic medals under her belt. Now she's getting another honor. She will be the flag bearer for her country of Australia in the opening ceremonies at the 2024 Paris Games. Fox, born in Marseille, but who moved to Australia at the age of four, said earning the role was probably the greatest moment of my career. She's joined by Australian field hockey player and five-time Olympian Eddie Ockenden. Obviously, that French connection is very strong. It's such a wonderful, special, unique moment to be able to bring my two cultures together, the French, the Australian, Fox said. Fox, who is 30, is returning for her fourth Olympics. She won a silver medal in 2012, a bronze in 2016, a bronze and a gold at the last Olympics. Fox has been among the athletes advocating for the canoe slalom event to be open to women. It was added at the most recent games in Tokyo, and she won her gold in that. Paddling runs in her family. Naomi Fox, 27, is joining her older sister in Paris, making her Olympics debut in the women's kayak cross event. Their mother, Miriam Yerushalmi, who is Jewish, of course, and coaches Jessica, won bronze for France at the 1996 Olympics. Their father, Richard, paddled for Britain at the 1992 Games. For Israel, judoka Peter Palchik and swimmer Andy Mures will serve as flag bearers. Retired basketball legend and five-time Olympian Sue Bird, who is Jewish, was one of Team USA's flag bearers in Tokyo 4 years ago. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Jeff Harner, whose new album is called Sammy Kahn, The Second Time Around. It's quite wonderful. Beautiful music, sung beautifully, I have to say. But it also feels fresh when we were talking a little bit about reinterpreting classic songs and not just imitating the way people have done them in the past. Tell us a little bit about Sammy Kahn himself.
Well, it's very interesting to me that he was born in Brooklyn. He had very little formal education, but he went on to become one of the most prolific songwriters of the last century. He had 30 Academy Award nominations. That's 30. More than any other songwriter, probably going forward as well. And he won 4 Oscars. He won an Emmy for the song Love and Marriage. He wrote for Broadway. He had a great hit called High Button Shoes. He put more words into Frank Sinatra's mouth than any other songwriter. And then during World War II, he sort of captured the heartbeat of our country at war through his lyrics in a very powerful way. They're kind of little time capsules, those songs. So yeah, he really is an extraordinary man. And, he was very, very funny. He just had, people asked him what comes first, the words or the music, and he would say, the phone call.
I thought it might be the check, but you have sung a lot of these classic songwriters. It seems to me Sammy Kahn's a lot easier to sing than Stephen Sondheim. Tell us, you've recorded albums of both. Tell us about the comparison.
Well, I didn't touch Stephen Sondheim's music till I was in my 50s. I was so intimidated by it. But then I thought to myself, let's do what you do with every songwriter. Start with the words and look for the words that tell your story. And he's got them. I mean, he was brilliant. And I put together the lyrics that made sense. And then with the help of my music director on that project, John Weber, we found, who is a jazz virtuoso. So my Sondheim album has a jazz feeling to it. And we made the songs very different. And for me, it made the melodies more accessible and the lyrics. The album is called I Know Things Now, My Life in Sondheim's Words. And that's how personal the lyrics are that I chose. The great thing about singing Sondheim is I had the good fortune of him actually coming to see a show.
Oh, my.
We were terrified because...
Of course.
I was terrified. But historically, he's been known to not like it when people, quote-unquote, improve his songs with clever arrangements. And we definitely reinvented every single song in a jazz setting and with the approaches that we used. And he, when we finished, he said, I loved it. I loved the changes. I wish there were more.
Oh, my. That's your Grammy right there. That's pretty good.
That's beautiful. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
I felt that. And he was very kind and stayed an email pal till the end of his life. And it was very encouraging, as many people have reported, that his nurturing of up-and-coming talent was one of his hallmarks.
Yeah, absolutely. And he could be extremely demanding. I remember a great story Meryl Streep told about, he wrote a song for her for Into the Woods and handed it to her. And at the top of the music he had written, don't screw it up. So that's a tough critic right there. I was just thinking again about the comparison, the difficulty of some of these songs. You know, when you're singing, you know, Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week, right? That's it. It just kind of flows, right? That's not how, I don't know, Being Alive or something from Sondheim feels when you got to sing it.
Well, actually, Being Alive is one of the more accessible melodies.
Yeah, that's probably true.
You know, he does have them, but you're absolutely right. He's known for the very ambitious, vocally dexterous melody line.
Vocal dexterity and sometimes the ranginess and the speed or... Getting Married Today. I don't know. That's a woman's song, but oh my God, it's faster than rap, and yet you have to hit every note just right. You ever going to do a Yiddish album?
No, I have not. But I do know that, you know, my director Barry Kleinbord worked with the Barry Sisters, so he got, you know, I'm 1 degree of separation from
wow
from some Yiddish greats. And but no, I have not. I don't think my Yiddish is any. Thank you, though.
You're welcome. No, I just say, I think it's, you know, look, as singers, you can sing in any language once you learn basically the sounds of it. That doesn't mean you can interpret it necessarily. And I mean, obviously, opera singers know all kinds of languages. That doesn't mean they speak any of them except their own. But I think you do a really nice job on that.
I was delighted to hear that the Moipe girls, their mother heard the recording and she said my pronunciation of the Swahili was perfect.
Boy, you're getting praise all over the place here, Jeff.
Oh, well, I speak like five syllables. But I'm glad to know that they're okay.
You should quell a little bit. That's okay.
Thank you.
What's your next project?
Well, the album just came out on Friday. I'm savoring the moment. I'm a big believer in Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. The only moment to enjoy is the one we have, because it's the only moment we have. And this is a delicious one that we've worked very hard for. But we're going to take the show around to London and Florida and other cities and enjoy it. I have some other engagements coming up in the future. I'll be doing a holiday show, and I co-host a night at the Cabaret Convention at Lincoln Center every October. So I will be hosting a night of Charles Strauss songs on Tuesday, October 22nd with Andrea Martucci. And that will be a star-studded night. So I'm very much looking forward to that. But most of all, I'm just relishing. You know, the story of this album is it came out 24 years ago. Under the title Sammy Kahn All the Way, and it's the label that released it went right out of business the same year. So it's been out of print. So what happened is PS Classics picked this album up and not only remastered it and re-released it and retitled it, but we reimagined it with six new songs. So it's very exciting what's happening right now. Very few people get the opportunity to revisit a project they finished years ago. And
that you thought was basically dead. I mean, if the album goes out of business, yeah.
May I give a shout out to one of your listeners?
Of Rabbi course.
Shema Gall. Her temple's in Sedona, Arizona.
Yeah, yeah. An old friend, by the way.
Is she a friend?
Well, for many years, she was, my dad was a cantor in Beverly Hills. Alicia McGall, now Rabbi McGall, was at Temple Emmanuel in Beverly Hills. So we go way back. And I taught her daughter in a youth choir about 1,000 years ago.
Oh, how fantastic. Well, I go to a Zoom Shabbat that Tova Felshu holds every Friday, and Alicia is our rabbi for that. Anyway, I know she will be listening.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Hi, Alicia. Good to talk to you. Remotely, in this case. One last question, Jeff. I meant to ask it earlier. What was the most difficult song on this album for you to record?
Well, that's an interesting question. I will say, and it's now also one of my favorite tracks, we took a song from a 1965 flop, called Skyscraper, And we recorded it 25 years ago as "I'll Only Miss Her When I Think of Her," which is how it was written and how it was sung on Broadway by Peter Marshall, a Hollywood Squares fan.
Yeah, yeah.
But in reimagining the album, the truth is, if I am singing that song, the lyric would be, "I'll only miss him when I think of him." And so we really explored how, if I am being absolutely transparent and honest about the reading of that song, what is the setting for it? And when we recorded it 25 years ago, we did it very much like you might hear it in the Broadway show. This time, Alex had the great idea to make it a samba. And that opened it up for me to really, for me, it's a very truthful track. But that was very much created in the studio together with the musicians that we had. It was a happy lightning strike, I think.
That's great. That's a great explanation. I have to say it just highlights the fact that interpretation is creation, really, and recreation. In this case, recreating something you did long ago and then reinventing aspects of it. Really lovely. I want to thank, by the way, Peter Marshall's son played first base for the Cubs. And his real name was Lecoq, Pete Lecoq. Why I remember this, I can't possibly.
Well, that's memorable.
Yeah, that's a memorable name.
When you're thinking of Jock.
Absolutely. Jeff, where can people go to find out more about you and to get the album?
Well, jeffharnar.com is the easiest, as long as you spell it H-A-R-N-A-R. That website can take you to any information about where I'm appearing. It also has a contact me. Anything you write to the contact comes directly to me. If you want to be in touch, I love hearing from people and how they respond to the music, and especially when people let me know I'm coming to a town near them. When I don't know locals, I love to know that there's somebody there who I can say hello to after the show.
Well, but by all means, come out to Tucson, and next time you get to Arizona, give us a shout. Jeff, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for including me and for shining your very attractive spotlight on our album.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical playout from Jeff Harner.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Aviva Klompas, author of the new book, Stand Up Nation, about how Israelis help others. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha this Friday night and every Friday night. Services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, followed by Kiddush, live in person and on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning comes from, who else? Our guest this morning, Jeff Harner. It's Sammy Kahn's swinging Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week.
My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week, 'cause that's the night that my sweetie and I used to dance cheek to cheek. I don't mind Sunday night at all, 'cause that's the night friends come to call. And Monday to Friday go fast, and another week is past. But Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week. I sing the song that I sang for the memories I usually see, until I hear you at the door, until you're in my arms once more. Saturday night is the loneliest night.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.